I mean, normally I like to ease you into it, but every now and then we get Ted Lefroy in from the Centre for Environment at the University of Tasmania, where he's the director, to take an idea that you've held for a long time. Why have you held it? Because it's just one of the ideas we have in our world, and it's embedded in your brain. And then he takes it out, examines it, and pulls it to pieces in a fascinating way. G'day, Ted.
Morning, Rick.
The balance of nature. Mm. Nature balances itself out, doesn't it?
Be lovely if it did, wouldn't it?
Why do we think it does?
Because we want to. Because it's been an aspiration probably for as long as humans have been around, that things would stay stable and predictable. And it was articulated by the Greek philosophers, Aristotle. And it's really just wishful thinking. But the evidence really came in.
But this is Mother Earth. This is the idea that, you know, Mother Earth will take care of her own and eventually she'll balance it all out in the end.
Yeah. Well, the fundamental reason why that is not the case is that Mother Earth is not still. She's on the move. She's dynamic. We live on a dynamic Earth and we live in a dynamic universe, which is changing. The trap is that our lifespan is tiny compared to the scales at which these things change. But where this was really brought home was Charles Darwin. And you know, I think what he did is absolutely remarkable. If you think he was 21 when he got on board the Beagle. He was away for 5 years. When he came back, he knew he had a big, dangerous idea. And really that fundamentally changed the way in the popular culture that we began to look at the world. And he was essentially a geologist on that trip, more than a natural historian. He'd studied geology at Cambridge. His lecturer had been offered the position of naturalist on the Beagle. His family wouldn't let him go, so he gave it to his star pupil. And off he went. And what he was looking at is evidence that the Earth had changed over time. And he's looking through all these strata and he finds bones and he finds fossils that he called megatheria, that we call dinosaurs now. And he realized this couldn't have happened during 40 days in a flood, which was, believe it or not, the conventional idea that it all happened during a flood. And then, so what he came back realizing that Earth changes and life adapts. And that was his fundamental idea, that we're always racing to catch up.
It really changes how you think about yourself. So I always get distracted with Charles Darwin because there's this Charles Darwin walk on the Eastern Shore because he visited Hobart.
He did.
And it's one of my favourite interpretation panels of all time, which says, Charles Darwin stood here, looked at these rocks and wrote of them, there's nothing of interest here to see. I've seen much of this before and the ones in Sydney are better. And I thought, he's not the only person who stood there and thought, yeah, it's better in Sydney. It's really funny. Anyway, we would be different if we thought of ourselves as part of a dynamic, ever-changing system. And we're constantly encouraged to think of ourselves like that, but we really don't want to.
No, we don't. We resist it. And we resist it very, very strongly. So this idea still, I don't think, has been embraced or encompassed. And we would love to think it was stable and predictable. You know, but that simply isn't the case. And yet the evidence is all around us. And I think, you know, the thing that changed the way he saw the world was the fact that he took two volumes of a book with him, Charles Lyell's Principles of Geology. And it was Lyell that really pulled together the idea that inside the Earth there's a heat engine and the Earth's crust moves, but it moves imperceptibly slowly. But we all accept that, don't we? That plate tectonics, the fact that mountains are building, earthquakes, volcanoes, we understand all that, but we think those are little anomalies in a stable world, but they're not.
Somehow, though, we want to legitimise our organisations by saying they're stable like nature, in the sense that they're God-given. You know, you know, God's given us the right to do this, and God is everlasting. We don't. We like everlasting, don't we? We like permanent.
Yeah.
We like all of that. You don't get many people saying, well, you know, things at the ABC change incredibly slowly. We are dynamic in the sense of the Earth's crust. Organisationally.
Yes, well, there is
no one's. I haven't heard anyone use that metaphor. Or a government saying, well, you know, we're just extremely chaotic. Like nature, we're natural.
Yeah, or something's proceeding at glacial pace.
Yes.
But if you think about it, when people think about balance of nature, the idea is you stand in a forest, if you cut it down, it wants to come back as it was. But if you stand in some parts of North America and Europe that are forests now, 15,000, 20,000 years ago, there was 2 kilometres of ice above you. It's, you know, we've been through a whole series of ice ages, about 100,000 years of ice and 10,000 years of a warm period.
Does that mean if you talk about restoring forests, say, after mining, you need to go restore it to what?
Well,
restore it, what, you want to put 2 kilometres of ice over that? Are you crazy?
That's the big question about restoration. The first thing you've got to say is, what's your reference point to what? And that is entirely a question of values.
Andrew Bolt will love this argument.
Well, you can take it too far, can't you? Because we do think about things in terms of human timescales. But if you think of it, the era that we're just coming out of, the Holocene, is just this warm period since the end of the last ice age. That allowed agriculture, and everything we know about cities and the development of civilization is a product of this warm period. Now, if Earth did go into another ice age, then that's very challenging. You know, it's like a big windscreen wiper over most of the continents, wiping things back. But we're doing our best to hold that back, it seems. And I don't know if you're aware, but there's a proposal to name the geological era we're just now entering the Anthropocene. Anthropos for man. It's the era where we have shaped the way things are. So not only is the Earth changing, but humans are also changing their environment. So things don't stay the same, but we evolve at a very slow pace, which is, you know, largely missed by human lifescales.
It's nearly 7:15 on 936 ABC Hobart. Ted Lefroy is director for the Centre of Environment at the University of Tasmania, and is exploring these dangerous and provocative ideas that we still don't believe in, really. I mean, Charles Darwin put this forward how many years ago, and we're still...
Yeah, well, look, he got off that
we're
boat.
We're still not comfortable with the idea that change is all around us, that mostly it is change.
And neither was he. I mean, he got off the boat 180 years ago. It took him over 20 years to actually put the book together because he realised what he had was hugely challenging to society as he knew it. So he spent a long time quietly publishing each little bit so that he had a platform to launch this book on.
World's first spin doctor. Ted, if there was to be an ice age, it wouldn't happen in any of our lifetimes. It would,
no.
You know, ice ages formed themselves over a very long period of time.
Yeah.
But is the speed with which we're seeing changes in our climate unusually fast? Because it feels like we are seeing changes in our lifetime, or is that just the human tendency?
No, they are.
Seen a winter like this since...
The changes are unprecedented, the pace at which it's changing. So the extent to which... you can only look statistically at ice ages. There are roughly 100,000 years each and roughly 13,000 years of a warm period in between. But that doesn't help us actually predict when the next one is. And all our efforts to warm things up, if anything, are going to hold it off. So, no, it's not going to happen in our lifetimes. But if you looked historically at the pattern, in terms of probability, there's a chance there'll be another one. But who knows when?
At the cutting edge of science, dynamism, change is where the excitement is. The modelling is about dealing with change. The fact that different disciplines are all interacting with each other to embrace complexity. Mm. How long do you think it will take before our political systems start to also embrace the idea, not of, you know, good versus evil, left versus right, of the duopoly, but embrace some form of complexity, embrace the idea of dynamism? It's one of the political problems we have now, isn't it?
It is, but I think it's something we do despite ourselves. Everybody wants to have prefers stability and predictability. Remember, there was, I think it was the...
Well, that's
debate.
What we're told all the time, isn't
yeah.
it? Well, no one's going to invest without a sense of stable government.
Yeah, bucket loads of certainty. Remember, there was one political, I think about the WIC debate, we're promising bucket loads of certainty. But that's something about the law and about politics, is that there is a kind of governor or a break so that we don't flip-flop into huge revolutionary change. So socially, we have systems in place and institutions. So we don't just, you know, someone can't get up in the morning and just change things for the sake of change. So there's socially and institutionally, there is an understandable resistance. But almost imperceptibly, those institutions evolve as well. They resist it. But the cultural evolution, biological evolution, it occurs,
Over time. So if you step out really far, though, in terms of the Earth and the idea of change and stability and go, well, there's a cold bit, then there's a hot bit, a cold bit and a hot bit. At that point, can you say nature is balancing itself?
Well, there's a term, homeostasis, which means homeo, the same, stasis, state, staying in the same state. People would like to believe that's true, but that's certainly not. There's another term, homeoresis. So that's the same trajectory. So the boundary conditions within life can exist, may change slowly over time, such as, you know, things like temperatures. The amount of oxygen in the atmosphere is 21%, has been for an awfully long time. Those boundary conditions may change, but life evolves to fit within them. So there's the process called homeoresis, which is far more accurately describes what we do. You really can reduce Darwin's big idea to five words. Earth changes and life adapts. And we have adapted and we will keep on adapting. But in order to do that, you need, the number one ingredient is wide variation from which to select. So when he was talking about natural selection, you have to have wide variation in natural systems from which to select those that are best adapted. So that's the clue to it. And that's why, you know, the Gaia theory is very appealing to people. But what's the unit of selection when there's only one planet? How do feedback loops evolve on a planet when there's only one of them? The Gaia theory is appealing to people, and it goes right back to what Plato said, that species are organs in a super being. It's a very appealing concept, but it really has no basis in science because there is no mechanism by which it could have evolved.
So we're not all connected.
Now there's a really good one. We are connected.
Gaia says we're all, that's why you're one organism, we're all connected.
Yeah, but those connections are not permanent. People say the interdependence within nature, such as the relationship between a bee and an orchid, you know, for pollination. You can look at all sorts of interconnections and dependencies in nature. You see it's balanced, but they're not. Those relationships shift and change over time. They're very flexible. What we think of as a community is a happy coincidence of organisms at a point in time. And if you get an earthquake or a landslide or a bushfire, over time you get a whole another set of relationships forming. So those, just because those relationships look magnificent in that they're mirror images of each other or they're beautifully matched, doesn't mean they last forever. They change.
Gosh, that's a great analogy for marriage and family, Ted. Draw from nature.
Now, see, this is a
because we need our analogies from nature, and I don't know why, but somehow they feed and sustain us.
I know.
We need in our decision making as humans to look at something around us and go, yes, that fits in, it belongs.
And there's a name for that. It's called the naturalistic fallacy, which is because it occurs in nature.
But we need the naturalistic fallacy. It helps us philosophically live.
No, we got to cut loose from that. Be brave. You don't have to look at that as a reference point. The idea that something occurs in nature, therefore it's good, you know, red in tooth and claw.
But how else do we legitimise ourselves, Ted?
Oh, you look inward, Rick.